Hey everybody, this is Kylie Payne, and you're listening to Back to the Fire. Today, I got to sit down and talk to my friend Kyle Weems. Kyle met him in Montevallo, and he still, as he says on the episode, you know, finds himself down there quite frequently. That's a pretty tight-knit community, and it's like, I guess, really nothing else like it, I feel like, in the rest of Alabama. So it's really nice being close to a place like that. Anyways, went over to Kyle's, and he played a little music for me with his Casio and his drums, and we talk a good bit about music and a creative process, and just sort of ramble on from there. So hope you enjoy it, and catch you later. Once again, today's theme music is brought to you by Way of the Road Official. I'll be linking to the SoundCloud and the links to this episode. Me and my girlfriend moved into an apartment in Pelham.
Fantastic.
Yeah, about 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah.
So that's been going well.
What's her name?
Kelly.
Yeah.
And she was living with me, you know, in the trailer for a while with my mom.
Okay.
For about a year before we finally got enough to get our own little spot. So.
Awesome.
Probably not going to renew the lease there. We've got some neighbors that we don't necessarily like.
Yeah.
So.
Looking to vacate.
Mm-hmm. And then
elsewhere.
I guess, you know, and then like the management or whatever isn't the most on the beat.
Helpful.
Yeah, like they've been, like been doing like renovations, but I don't know, like every time they do something they have to come back 2 times to fix it.
Annoying.
Yeah. Like they came through and like replaced, you know, like the oven and the washing machine, and then like painted the cabinets, but then like when they replaced some of the appliances, they ripped one of the cabinet faces off, and that's never been replaced. That's
fuck
about
it.
3 months ago. And then like when they painted the cabinets, there was like a bunch of overspray, so it got on like the blinds and the wall. And
you had one job.
Yeah. And then also it's sort of weird because like some of the tenants in the complex are some of the people doing the renovations, so it's just like I don't know how they got, you know, into that situation,
uh-huh.
But it all seems sort of wonky. And
I had my toilet fixed about 6 different times.
Mm.
Same problem, a little latch makes the water go down.
It's
getting stuck and it keeps running. And
yeah. Doesn't sound like it's really getting fixed.
No, please. No, I need a toilet is what I need.
Mm.
We kind of finally came to that realization is we're going to have to buy a new toilet if it gonna get fixed.
Yeah.
This place.
Cool.
Been here a little bit more than a year. Well, no, actually. More than a little bit. Like a year and a half.
Nice. Sister and her boyfriend moved into the same complex as us. It was a different building, but they were on the first floor, and I guess there was like a crack in the foundation because whenever it rained, their bedroom got wet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they didn't stay very long. They've already, like, they were able to break their lease because of the issues they were having.
Right.
Because they found mold as well as a result. And
there's
so, yeah.
A lot of places with mold in Alabama.
Yeah, all the humidity, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, there was a situation for a little while, it was a place where I used to work, the boss was gonna, like, trying to get me to, like, move into a little house that he had inherited, and, like, you know, had to kick the last tenant out because they weren't paying rent, and then, yeah, like, I don't know, like I didn't want to be in a situation where the guy writing my paycheck was also the one, you know, expecting rent to come in. So yeah, that's just could get messy real fast.
And it could.
So yeah, I opted not to get into that. But anyways, because you know, I was thinking about it for a time, but then like got there and found some mold in the walls, and then he was like, you know, wanting to do some sort of easy fix, and I was like, I don't know if I feel comfortable. Like that's setting a low precedent for the rest of the.
You're low here, buddy.
So.
It's a nice little recorder there.
Yeah. Is that like and I already just started recording.
Oh, that's fine,
Yeah, like I just got it or last Sunday from my friend Mike, and he's I think planning on getting a couple other like that. We're gonna have like little like kits that people can check out.
Okay.
And so if they want to do a programming, yeah, they can just come in, pick it up, and like you know have it for a couple days, and then bring it back in and
like a rent situation.
Yeah, and then like we'll have like little like workstation set up so you can just go plug it in and then
I
do
really
all your
dig
editing.
That.
So yeah, like really like excited when Mike contacted me, and you know he's like. Because, yeah, he did, like, the Green Cup books, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago. And then when that went under, he just sort of went into hiding for a while. And then, yeah, I hadn't really heard from him that much until he messaged me with this. And then, like, I showed up to the meeting. There was, like, several people there. And, like, some of the people who I would see at the bookstore, too. And like, at the time doing that, like, I was still in, like, high school. So I was, like, I felt, like, out of place, like, not really able to contribute. Whereas now I feel more on the same level, so...
That's cool. Got
yeah.
More under your belt.
Mm-hmm.
It can be intimidating.
Being able to, you know, do this and go out and talk to people, it gives me an excuse to reach out to more people.
Yeah.
So, that's been good.
Tools are good. Mine's music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That setup over there.
Cool. Yeah, I was listening to, like, some of the stuff on your SoundCloud, like the set that you did with at Jackie's place.
Yeah.
I was enjoying that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that show was good and bad, mostly good. I was just trying to get some keyboard tracks out, and I'm still working on them. Things that I write are sort of like I'll take a theme and just play the shit out of it just a thousand different ways. And so songs can be written off of that based on these forms, but I don't want to stick to a certain form. It's just like the possibilities are so open that you don't want to set yourself towards one song vein. I mean,
it's always interesting for me, like sitting down and talking to somebody who works musically, since I'm mainly like a visual person.
Yeah.
But like I've got a friend who does, you know, some like DJing stuff and does a lot of like, you know, music visually. And so like, just like when he talks about working in layers, and then I'm used to working in layers in Photoshop, like I feel like there's some amount of overlap. Like some of the terminology is totally different, but like, you know, there's like the Venn diagram where there's that intersection.
There's tons of intersections in the creative process.
But yeah, like, and also I guess like, you know, I'm trying to finish up my degree at Montevallo, and I got like a music appreciation class that was like, you know, I'm actually like learning a lot from it, because, you know, I've got like, I guess, you know, I've always had an interest in music and have like a wide sort of like, you know, palette that I, you know, listen to, but never really had the terminology to comprehend some of the things that was going on. I just like, oh, well, that's complex and interesting and I like it, but I didn't know.
Do you have any specific examples? Things you learned in music theory?
Well, I mean, just sort of like talking about how, I'm trying to think of some of the terms that are being put on the spot now, like, I guess, understanding the differences in some of the words, like, you know, what, like, harmonies are, and then, like, melodies and motifs, and things like syncopation, and just like
syncopation's
how...
Syncopation's right up my alley as a drummer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, just, like, learning a lot of that and then trying to, I guess, bring it back into, you know, the stuff that I listen to.
Sure.
It's like, you know, funny because he teaches the class, like, it's, you know, it's an intro, you know, freshman course, so he really tries to, you know, hound home the point that's like, you know, you gotta, like, study and pay attention. He made it sound, like, a lot harder than what it actually was, just trying to wake up the freshman.
Yeah.
But, he's pretty entertaining with the lectures and you know, like typically opens up the course with, like, you know, get to listen to, like, some sort of piece, like a modern piece that sort of has connections to what we'd be discussing in class. So, like, the other day I got to listen to, like, Queen Bohemian Rhapsody.
Cool.
And then, because we were getting into the Romantic period.
Okay.
And so that's where we're at right now.
That's awesome. A lot of current music has these elements of classical and romantic and other, you know, old forms.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still these elements that we use as musicians that, I don't know, always really ring true.
Yeah, and, like, I guess sort of deviating a little bit, like, because, you know, learning about all these things and how, like, a lot of these elements, I guess, have, you know, have their origins or roots, like, you know, a really long time ago, and then, you know, they've been developed a little bit since, you know, their inception. But, I don't know, it feels like if musical history were to happen, like, in the present, like, I feel like with the, I guess, the whatever that
yeah.
exists now, like, things would be, I feel like it would stifle things a lot, like, because, I had this weird thought that came to my head, where, like, you know, if you know, the major and minor skills, like, that was, like, created today, like, somebody would
yeah.
patent that. Like,
sure.
Like, you couldn't
that, yeah, somebody
operate
would own
these.
That.
Mm-hmm. But since it's so long ago, it's just, like, commonly accepted that, like, you know, this is just how things work, and everybody operates off of that.
It's kind of like you have this feeling that you're cheating, in a way, as a musician, like you just get to find out all this information about music, and then instantly apply it, and it's like, is it that easy, you know, to be able to repeat? Yeah, it is that easy for the most part. I mean, yeah, it takes practice and dedication to be able to play on tempo and to have your chops, but at another point you can play, you know, right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Standards and then not having them.
Yeah, and I guess that's one of the, I guess great things about, you know, I guess, having such easy access to instruments is, like, you know, there is, like, well, that's, I guess, how, you know, we get, like, punk and, you know,
uh-huh.
the DIY ethics, because you just pick it up and you learn it yourself.
I am an instrument hoarder. Like, I have collected some instruments over the years, and some have left, and I still have, like, a lot in here, but I love making vibrations with anything I can pick up, so, yeah. T.
Oh,
glorious
yeah.
thing. I drink so much, I think I'm an old southern lady sometimes.
Yeah, I have a fair share myself.
It's just so good.
Been having a couple of different, I guess, you know, types of tea recently, been branching
yeah.
out.
Mixing it up.
Yeah, like, been drinking some, like, ginger tea, and then a blend that Kelly likes. It's like peacoat or something like that.
Yeah,
or, yeah, it's like orange.
Mm-hmm.
That's
orange
pretty
peacoat.
Good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You ever had Sleepy Time?
I think so. Yeah,
it's got that valerian root thing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good.
I think they had, like, a variety box or whatever, and it had some of that, and then some, like, peppermint.
Okay.
Some other kind.
I really like peppermint tea. I get, like, some, like, concentrated stuff. It's, like, the Mentha Vetus, like, you know, it has a label on it.
Oh.
Maybe it's Arborensis. I don't forget the actual Latin title.
Hear about, like, a bottle tree closing?
I did. I heard about that, like, 4 days ago, and it was all like, yeah, they're trying not to let people know, but it's gonna be shut down. And yeah, they sold to an underage person, apparently.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, apparently they sold to an underage person. They were trying to, like, not tell everybody because they, you know, had some more shows, I guess, the rest of this month. Someone in Montevallo told me recently.
Because I've heard a couple different things. Like, I heard, like, I was hearing, like, Jim and Nick's for
that.
A while.
Yeah.
And then I heard somebody say, like, and, like, it wasn't Jim and Nick's, but it's, like, the, I guess, person who owns Jim and Nick's. And then I heard something about saying, like, where they were going to keep it a venue. And then I heard, oh, no, they're going to turn it into, like, some other restaurant that's not a Jim and Nick's. So
okay.
Really have no clue.
That's a basket of just what happened.
And then, I guess, like, Brian Teasley is opening a coffee shop venue in Avondale called Saturn. So it's supposed to be the new bottle tree, I suppose.
Ah, there's going to be a replacement soon.
Yeah, like they've already got like the, what is it, like the architectural like designs or whatever, like a mock-up image to show everybody. So that's happening.
Cool. New venue.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Birmingham needs new venues.
Oh, yeah. And then it's like we've been having our meetings at like Mono in Woodlong, and that's like a new venue, like recording space, and I haven't been able to catch any of the shows there yet, but the space itself is pretty cool. So and then like we're doing the whole Monolith Radio out of it, so
awesome.
Probably get to know that place pretty well.
Oh, my neighbor does not like music. I have one neighbor that is called a noise complaint only. The two above me are cool, but that one has... She's not here right now, so... I have to check. It's like I get to play for like 10 minutes and then go check.
Oh, no.
Play 10 more minutes. Go check. Yeah, it can be frustrating.
Yeah, do what you gotta do, though.
Yeah. That's true. Where there's a wheel, there's a way, you know what I mean? I always start at 120 BPM. Like,
feeling that.
Cool. I'm going to do another version on that where I throw in a little percussion if that's okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I try not to like overdo this because I'm
thank you.
Oh yeah, that would be amazing. But I'm not more willing than that. Cool.
I've always liked when people like incorporate, I guess, like loops, like loop pedals into things,
uh-huh.
and so you're able to like, yeah, it's like set up something and then you know move away and do something.
I really want a loop pedal. Like that's one of my like wants as a musician. Because if I could loop a drum and a keyboard, then I could play melody over that. Like that would be where it's at for me. Cool.
Yeah,
I have more, but I have to take a short break. I don't know.
Alright.
I like to take breaks when I play.
Yeah, I really like the, I guess, you know, the tone of the sound that produces.
Sure, like, without the drum track on its own, like, you just sit there and hold that chord and it just whirring, on its own.
It's like, I guess it's like, you know, the different decades that, you know, and like the synth instruments that, you know, like were produced, or like, you know, I guess the qualities, like, you know, I don't, like during the 80s, like there's a very distinctive sound, and like it
sure.
took me a while to get to like 80s like synth sound.
Oh yeah.
I'm still sort of like,
it's uber happy and just like uber. Yeah. I have some synths on there that it's just like uber cheerful.
But
even when you play things in minor, it's just eerily happy, you know.
So yeah, like I don't know, but yeah, that I think, you know, that the sound that produces is very, I don't know, like it's I guess full.
Yeah.
And I like that. So.
Well, organ has always been a go-to for that. Having a full sound. It's the organ grinder, DJ Shadow. Thing, and of course it's full, it's an organ. I think that's an actual thing. Yep.
Let's see, I'm trying to think of any like new music I've come across. Like, I don't know, recently tried to like, you know, download a few things and found just like, I guess, you know, torrents aren't what they used to be.
Yeah.
I was having a hard time finding like older things. Like if it was, you know, new and just came out, there's a lot of CDs.
Oh, sure. But, yeah, there's everything new.
But, you know, now there's, you know, all the different streaming media and YouTube. But now YouTube's going to be changing. So they've they're like, I guess, doing all sorts of like new licenses and like partnerships with people, and so like they're thinking about like doing this like music program where like you know, artists can sign up for that, and like they have like a partnership with YouTube, and like I guess they get a, you know, a certain cut of you know, revenue, which I, you know, I assume they're already getting some cut, and this is just going to renegotiate what that percentage is. And then but yeah, like all music has to go through that specific like subset of YouTube, and people who, I guess, upload their music and don't go through that, you know, something will happen. Which I've heard they're changing things, like people who do like Let's Plays and like, you know, upload video games, they're changing that too.
I saw an article about that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, like I read something about, like, I guess Nintendo specifically was saying like they've got like a list of games that you can't upload, and if you've uploaded one of those, then
like we will fuck you up.
Or yeah, it's like it'll be pulled from your channel, and then like, and something about like, you know, if you upload, I guess, like some Nintendo games, but then you do like other publishers or whatever, and then like they still get a percentage of your ads, ad revenue, regardless of if it's a Nintendo video or not. Like, you know, as long as you have one of their games on your channel, they get and there's
cut. Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know if that's changed. That it's been a couple weeks since I read that, and there's a lot of outcry, I guess, against that. So hopefully they'll.
I could see why.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll listen to the fan base a little bit and work with them.
My friend Charles does Let's Plays. He's an old school gamer, and Like, he's done a few, and they're not, like, where it's the screen capture method.
Mm.
He's just vlogged them from his phone or whatever recording device, but that's one of his hobbies is to watch and make Let's Plays.
Yeah, Kelly's got, like, a couple of channels that she watches.
Have you ever heard of Nintendo Capri Sun? Mm-hmm. This guy, I don't know, he's ridiculous. He's a Let's Player. He talks a lot about Nintendo games and I think Final Fantasy probably and things like that.
Yeah, and like I haven't looked too much into that community, like unless it's like a game specifically
that you're playing.
Yeah, or like something that like I don't know, like the Metal Gear series.
Uh-huh.
Like I've gone and watched just like the cutscenes out of those, just because like I don't have time to go through and play the games. I wanted to like refresh myself before playing one of the new ones.
Uh-huh.
So I'll do that, but I don't know. Yeah, I guess like Kelly watches a lot of the Game Grumps.
Okay.
And it's like they're not particularly good at
right.
playing the games, but they've got like a lot of
just
personality.
Attitude, yeah.
So
you watch how they play.
Mm-hmm.
I like watching people play Grand Theft Auto. There's an old lady playing GTA video that's been circulating. that's pretty good.
Mm.
Yo, wankers!
Did you ever see that, like, grandma's smoking pot for the first time?
Yes, I did.
That was really funny.
That was awesome. Wanted to sit there with him.
Yeah, I guess it's always, you know, comedic seeing, you know, people, you know, not doing something you would expect out of their age group.
But. Sure, but it happens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, I was at a friend's the other day, and it was like it was like church choirs doing, like, modern, like, pop and rap
uh-huh.
songs, and it was, like, so unnerving.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Christian music. That's a strange
thing. And then, like, the video ended with, like, you know, we'll record a song for you, visit us at whatevercholir.com. And so that was like, their gimmick was like, you send them a song and they'll record it.
Wow. Okay. I mean, good for them, but, you know. I need a 50-person choir behind my music. Black metal, we'll hire orchestras.
Yeah.
Get that full sound, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I can, you know, said, you mentioned Devin Townsend earlier. He's involved, like, orchestration into some of his more recent
mm-hmm.
works. And then, it's like, one of the things that he did I thought was pretty cool is, like, he wanted to have, like, a choir of, like, his fans. And so, like, he put the lyrics to a couple songs out and, like, released some click tracks. And then, just told everybody, like, you know, like, send, you know, your recordings to this email. And then he, like, compiled them all together. And so that's, you know, the chorus on a couple of the tracks.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah. Just internet being used for different, yeah, creative
sure.
means.
I'm all down for co-oping online.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to make my own, like, drum sample bass, but just, I don't know, I'm kind of like you, I'm just getting into the audio world. Like, yes, I've been a musician for a long time, and I know a little bit about it, like, the smallest bit about amps and music technology, like, computer music technology, and, you know, a little bit of musical theory, you know, just from what I've learned. But it's like, I'm so new, like, I don't know half the things that other people know.
Mm.
But, I mean, that's the beautiful thing, too, is you can use whatever to record and to produce with. And you don't have to have, like, the latest thing to be able to you know, engage in the creative process.
It's like, one of the things I've, like, been interested in for the longest time has been, like, circuit bending.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've never really, like, there was, like, one or two times, like, I got something from the thrift store and, like, soldered something, and then, like, it just, like,
uh-huh.
I ended up breaking it, and then, like, and then just, like, sort of, and I didn't have the momentum to keep going.
Yeah.
But, Like, there's a guy named, like, Seth Lewis who was with, like, the Red Mountain Makers.
Okay.
He's done a lot of that. And then, like, I've seen, like, Lindsay Jett posting
videos.
I was
just about to say that. That girl had, like, the little...
Yeah, the, like, the Simpsons box or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, that's real cool. Like, that's something I really...
Like, yeah.
Yeah, like, really dig that stuff. With, like, would really want to
find time to do that. I got a keyboard that's, like, on the way out. If you want to, like... do some work, like, I don't know, we could fuck with it. I'd like the top range is going out, like the bass still works, so there's potential there. And like, I guess the pieces inside are still like useful if you hook them up the right way. I just like it would be completely like new and experimental thing.
Oh, yeah,
to be, like no kind of like knowledge base going into that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean that's totally, you know, how I was. And like I said, like I made a few cool noises, and then like I did something, and it just sort of like
just
and stopped. It's like, okay, I messed up.
It is kind of tentative like that. Like either it, you know, it's gonna work or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Not be afraid to, you know, push the boundaries of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you learn.
Yeah, like I was talking to a friend not too long ago, just earlier in the week, and he sent me a couple like videos from YouTube. They were like interviews with like Francis Bacon.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Like I'd never, like I've seen some of his work before, but I've never seen him talk about it before. And so it was really interesting hearing his take on, because you know, he was self-taught and was talking about how like he was like so broke that he ran out of canvases, and so he started painting on the backs of canvases and realized he liked painting on the back side rather than the primed side. And so it's like the wrong way was the right way for him.
Right. I've got a perfect example for that. So like in drumming, there's like what's called grips. It's how you grip the stick, and there's this is match grip where the wrist are upwards, or the palm, or sorry, the top hands are upward, and then there's traditional, which the left hand is up like this, and the stick goes, you know, through there, and you hold it kind of like that.
Mm.
But for some reason, like my arm just has some problems doing that, like that motion. But my right hand, you know, right up. And so I play reverse traditional with my right hands like that. And yeah, that worked for me, but I've tried for 10 years to play regular traditional, and I can get to a point, but I can't like do it enough to be able to hold down a rhythm. I guess on a kid I could, like if it was like a jazz kind of rhythm, like I know how to do those things, but as far as like a solo rhythm, like that's kind of iffy. As a musician, you want to know that you can pull something off if you're going to say you can do it.
Yeah. I don't know, like years and years ago, you know, I had a friend or two that would like try to like, you know, they would put a guitar in my hand, like I'm going to teach you, and then like it's like I think like the first time, like, you know, they had me play it like you know traditionally, like, you know, it's like right, I mean, I'm left-handed though, and then like the next time around, like they, it's like I tried it the other way, and like both ways felt awkward, and
so
I guess, you know, I didn't put the time in to really get comfortable one way or the other. So
right, guitar that's an interesting instrument to learn. Like, you really have to, like, put time in with your instrument and sit there and go, okay, and if it's a rush thing or if it's a force thing, then generally people just go, I don't, you know, that'll get into it.
And then, you know, I think now, like, you know, getting a little bit of, like, you know, understanding musically, so I could understand more, I guess, like, the structure of the guitar and the way that it's laid out, whereas before it was, like, totally just, like, I have no idea. It's like, you know,
like what's going on with all these lines? And
yeah, it's like
and
you got five different strings, and each can produce the same sounds, but in different places.
But at different intervals, yeah.
Yeah, so that was just, like, the layout was boggling to me.
Sure. The first time I looked at a saxophone, that was my first instrument, and I'm going, like, there are, like 50 different little, you know, things here. How am I going to remember where all this goes?
Mm.
But it just comes with spending time with the thing and putting your hands on the thing, and
Victor Wooten put out a really good TED Talk, maybe not recently, Gabriella Island, I think, but he was talking about, you know, music being a language and the creative process. But he was talking about teaching music, and he said most teachers, they want to show you something first. Like, they want to get right to it, you know, play something. And we'd never take time to really, like, just look at the instruments and just appreciate it for what it is. Like, he said that he had a music instructor that, like, his first lesson, it was just, like, look at the instrument and then take it home. And just don't play it, but just, you know, get to know it.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that, those kind of sentiments.
Yeah, yeah. I think I guess feel like I would learn more from that sort of like outside of the box approach.
Yeah.
And I think you know, I would hope the majority of you know children who you know. Given that sort of approach would respond to that.
And he was talking about children learning music too, and it's like you don't tell a child, okay, you're going to be playing in 4/4 and you're going to be, you know, and BPMs and all this, and you just play and you show them and you play, and that's like the language, that's communicating, and it's as intuitive as that. Like, mm-hmm. We overcomplicate things with our ideas sometimes to the point where we're hindering our own process.
Mm.
And when you can really simplify it and go, okay, music is just like people making vibrations with each other and learning how to do those things with each other. And so therefore it's just doing it with each other.
Yeah. I was like, I think it was a different TED Talk, like I call it part of it on like NPR, but it was talking about how... like before, we're like taught like formal math and like, you know, number system, like our brains operate logarithmically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like, you know, you tell me like, you know, get one, and then they get one, and like now two, and they like, then they just grab all of them. Cause like that's the distinction that makes like one mini, and
more,
like there's just
one
like this,
more.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like it's like the brain has like these intuitive ways of understanding and operating, and yeah, I think there's a tendency to try to like hush that up and override it, and yeah, we need to tap into that more.
Totally. I like your shirt, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I've had it for a while now. I was actually just recently, or this morning actually, like going through. Pictures I took back in 2012 of like the Surf Fest in Georgia, and so yeah,
cool.
It's been a while since I've seen a surf act. I'd like to catch another one sometime. Alright, so yeah, we were just talking about how my niece, who just recently turned 4, will sit down with me sometimes and we'll paint or draw together, and I'll just ask her open-ended questions about what she's doing, you know, just give her a chance to think about, you know, what she's doing, and you know, a chance to respond, and I've noticed her mimicking some of the things that I'll do. For example, I'll take a paintbrush and you know, water it down, and then just flick the paint onto the paper. And now she started doing that too. And then
that's really cool. It's kind of like what I talk about in drums all the time. It's a process of psychomotor formation, where you watch somebody do something, and then their brain instantly starts mapping. Along the neuron circuits, what you are doing and trying to figure it out for themselves. And that's a really beautiful thing. Yeah, you just show somebody like a drum beat, like, and their brain instantly thinks of their right hand, and the neurons fire just like it would, and then you give them a drumstick, and they don't, you don't have to teach them anything but show them a sound, and their body can instantly create it in some type of way. And it doesn't even have to be with the hand. It can be, you know, like that. That's a really cool process.
Yeah. And yeah, it goes back to what we were saying outside. I mean, it's like, yeah, like we need to, you know, allow, you know, ourselves to tap into that intuitive, you know, nature that, you know, we're capable of.
Right. We have a lot of limitations that we put on ourselves that are liminal and that can get that, you know, that most people don't really just take for granted. But if you really can tune into these things and filter out the static, you can get to some things that we haven't came upon yet as a species, I think. Some new music ideas, some new philosophical, whatever. Like, it's a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
My back, however, is not.
Ah.
Scoliosis. It's a fun thing. Comes from playing drums.
Like the still life that I'm painting right now, like the perspective that I chose is lower than my stool is capable of going to, so yeah, I'm about I guess, you know, like this.
Yeah.
I hunch over a lot.
But. And when I draw, I put things in my put it in my lap, so I'm like, you know, like this the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that puts some stress on my back for sure. I've always had terrible posture. It's always been a thing.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I guess it's, you know, you see your work differently, working at it from different distances.
Advantages.
I guess you tend to start out, you know, wide, and then as you focus in on one area, you get closer and closer to it. I know I've always enjoyed being able to, like, back up
and
just
take
do, like, the full strokes. Or then,
just,
like, being able to, like, put several feet between you and the work and view it from afar. Because I guess that's typically where most people are going
to
their
view
initial,
it. Right. And, yeah, you spend a lot of time up close, but how is the viewer looking at it? And we think about that as musicians, too. Like, how is it going to sound out there? Because, when we're practicing in a house and all that, the vibrations are happening all around us and all that's contained, it's going to sound great. But how do you apply that to, like, a venue where you've got, you know, 50-some-odd people, you've got things, you know, voices and chatter, and then the body's taking up the physical space, and you really have to plan for that. And even back in marching band, we used to have to know, like, where you are on the field designates what your timing is and how you play. Like, if you're in the very back of the field, you have to play ahead of the beat because your sound is traveling farther. If you're at the very front, you have to play behind the beat because it's right there.
Hmm.
Or you have, not behind the beat, but like, I don't know.
And see, that's interesting because, I mean, like, I've filmed marching bands for a long time.
I know about that.
But since I was never, you know, a part of it, I was unaware of the subtleties of some of the things that were going on.
Have you ever watched Drum Corps International?
Yeah, like, I had a friend, Alex, who was marched several years with the Blue Coats.
Really?
Or Spirit, or at one, at perhaps both of them. It's been a while since.
Alex who?
Norman.
Really?
Yeah. He moved up to Portland a little while ago, but, he was real big into that.
Yeah, we're on the same, like, sound Facebook page with the sound post, and I've seen Alex Norman's post for, like, years because of you. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. It's a small world.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I watch Blue Coats. Like, Blue Coats come up in the Drumline feed I follow on Facebook, just videos for Drumline and drummers. And, the Blue Coats are definitely, like, legit.
Mm.
They can hold it down.
And it was, interesting hearing, you know, the stories about just, like, the things that they would go through and, like, how intense, because it's just, like, they're in their own world for several months, and so, like, it's this whole, like, you know,
it's all encompassing, like,
you know, like, all these intense relationships form, and, like, it's like everything is compacted,
right?
And I just thought that was interesting.
This might sound kind of trite to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's like, have you ever seen like what society thinks you do, what you actually do?
Oh, yeah,
do?
Yeah, those.
Like, it's kind of like people have this perception that you learn, like, you know, your show songs, and then you maybe learn, like, some tunes that you play in the stands, and that's all you do.
Mm.
And that's a fallacy. Like, what you actually have to do to learn, like, professional drum corps music, you have to put in countless hours of playing with a metronome or playing with your, you know, your drum line, your drum mates, to the point where they're playing the check, what we call check rhythms. Like, for instance, you have like straight 16th notes, like right, like, or like, and then you, like, depending on where you want your accents, the accent, like the harder beat. Like, one person can be playing the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da where it's on the downbeat, and then somebody will be playing da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-
it's just anytime somebody starts playing accented beats, initially the inclination is to speed it up or to slow it down and to not play it on tempo, so you have to have that check pattern.
Mm.
I don't know.
It's like, yeah, like the point of reference.
Right.
That, you know, the crux that holds everything.
Exactly.
But,
it's the pocket, as we call it, as drummers, too.
And then, and I guess, and it's interesting seeing, some of that, I guess, translated into, you know, like, you know, movements on the field where, you know, everybody would, like, pivot around.
Oh, yeah. The past couple of years, they used some extreme pivoting maneuvers. Mm. Like, I saw, like, some tenor players, like, the, you know, the six tenors, they lean back, and I saw the snares, like, jump over, and, like, individually, like, each one.
Mm.
It was, yeah, pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a, yeah, really, like, and just like, yeah, the, you know, like you're saying, like, just the countless hours and just, like, perfecting, you know, both sides of that to be able to pull that off.
Like, if you look at this drum, this is a drum corps stick, the Vic Firth, you know, hold it, it's really thick.
Yeah.
Like, it's thicker than any drumstick, pretty much, and that's the, yeah, world standard. Yeah, you have to really, like, work with that and feel it. And but once you get how the fulcrum of your hand is supposed to work and how the weight works, it'll just explode on the drum, like all that extra weight on the stick.
Yeah.
Like, I recently got these are really cool mallets, bass drum mallets. I played with Abraham and the Old Gods, and initially I was using a regular drumstick on the bass drum, and it had this really, like, it was still low, but it had this really, like, ta sound, like do ta, or I don't know. But so with this end, it's more of a boom boom, it's more, you know, rounded. It comes in a lot better, and it's really like a more natural poppy kind of bass drum sound. But it can get really rocky too, and how you use it on the head. The different, like, I have a sticker on my head as well, and it's like a beater pad sticker for like a bass drum pedal for your foot, you know, like for a drum set.
Yeah,
but I've used it for my hand because, like, you know, you hit the center of it and it's like, It cuts all the resonance away, so it's really, like, just thuddy. But then when you play outside of the sticker, just on the drum head, it has that full resonance to it, and you can work with that.
Yeah.
And you can create different little, like, counterpoint rhythms within your bass drum work alone. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. Thank you.
probably 6 different forms for and different tones that I use the melody with. So it's just really going to be a specific, or not specific, but like 1 or 2 interpretations of a melody.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be more stuff done, but I'll say that.
Okay. I'll just kind of work through the motif a little bit.
And then, yeah, you brought this up earlier.
Yeah, that's my graph paper pattern.
Yeah, geometry has always been a, I've always enjoyed work that includes geometry and...
I've always been into math, so I like abstract shapes and I like patterns a lot.
Yeah.
And, I really like that pattern. Like, the numbers kind of speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a strange thing to say, but
no, that makes sense.
That's fine. Yeah, thanks. It has been fun sitting and talking with you, man.
Yeah. Oh, and then I was gonna ask, like, what about these paintings that are on your wall here?
That's my friend Andrew Logan's work. The boyfriend of one of my best friends, Anna McFall, an old Mono Battle buddy.
Yeah.
And that's the balance between the chaos and the order. The chaos symbol on the left and then the order sign on the right. And then you've got the scales in the middle. Which is, you know, supposed to be a balance in between the two. And I kind of like that kind of thought pattern, you know, the chaos and the order of the universe and the interplay of those two. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a 50-50 thing, but those two are always in play, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely like the stood out when it, you know, came in.
Yeah, I like that piece just as it is. He told me to set it up like that, and I like it.
Yeah, because I guess like I didn't notice right off the bat, even though it's like it's, you know, it's fairly obvious. It's just like the four spheres are, you know, that unify them.
Yeah.
But somehow, as you know, as clearly as you know, they are, like, it didn't register at first. Yeah, and it was another thing that caught my eye was like the. Last person that I talked to, he like does like graffiti, and, like uses like stencils and such, and he had done something with the chaos symbol, and so like I saw that when I walked into his apartment, and then I saw that,
cool.
So like
this
so keeps cropping up. So
it's awesome.
But yeah, I guess good note to end on.
Awesome, enjoyed it, man.
Yeah. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Back to the Fire with Kyle Weems and myself. Kyle's SoundCloud account is AXLROLLZ, Axel Rose, in case you want to check that out and hear some of the sounds and musics that he's been producing recently. Until next time, take care.